evening, everyone. Good evening. I have one of my favorite paradigm shifters, and oh boy, is she going to shift your paradigm tonight. She's going to shake your little boots. Welcome to the show, Linda Sherman.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Veronica. It's a pleasure to be on Paradigm Shifters.
Well, I'm very excited about your second book called Fast Forward, Surviving the Race to the Future. So my question to you as an astrologer and as a wonderful analyst of the economic craziness of our planet, not just economic, political, economic, everything, craziness on our planet right now. Do you think we're going to survive the future?
I think we can. I'm of the opinion that whether we survive the future that we have all participated in a sense, or not, is going to be our decision, our choice. There are solutions to the problems that are pretty impressive that we have created as the human civilization, and the masses of humanity have participated in at this particular time. The economic crisis, the global economic depression, or no matter what they call about it, was a recession from which we are recovering. The only people that have recovered are the 300 richest people in the world that have more money than the bottom 3 billion people do.
Wow, big pockets, eh? And they're really generous, right?
Yes, right. And they want to take health benefits away, and they do not want to pay any taxes, and there's an arrogance and an ego dominance in the culture of the super rich people that is beyond belief.
Well, it's interesting to me that the economic swindles, I keep calling them the swindling times, you know, they're taking money from all kinds of situations, but they've been caught. Everybody knows it's happening. So, Linda, how come they're still free and they're not being put in jail? How come?
Yes, exactly. They are not the... you take Barclays that was caught manipulating the LIBOR and laundering drug money. J.P. Morgan Chase, the same thing, caught manipulating the LIBOR, mortgage fraud, lying or taking major derivatives losses in the terms of billions of dollars and lying about it. And Goldman Sachs indicted for many of these same things. They are receiving a slap on the wrist fine, mm-hmm. which is equivalent in their cases, most of them, to about a week's worth of their profits. And absolutely nobody is going to jail.
But you know, when you think about what we can do about it, when you think about it, many people can't even think about it because it's so incredibly overwhelming.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It is to most of us, because I like to look back in history at similar times when revolutions were going on in the world at large. And we knew who the monarchies were. We knew their names. We knew King George at the time of the American Revolution. We knew Marie Antoinette and King Louis XV at the time of the French Revolution. Today, people don't even know the names of the CEOs that are running the giant banks, commonly referred to as banksters. There's very little education that people, we haven't been brought up to be educated about the world of finance, and these guys have gotten so big and so powerful, they're engaging in criminal activity, and they're ruining the global economy while making profits. To give you an example, the derivatives market right now as we speak is above $800 trillion, and that's these giant banks and hedge funds buying puts and calls on stocks, commodities, bonds, not buying stocks, commodities, or bonds, but buying bets on them. And this is where the money is going, not into the market, not into companies, not into the pockets of the people in the terms of wages.
It's almost like a lottery for the world.
Right. It is a lottery. It's a casino. And they're getting away from it. It's sort of equivalent to the world being run by the mob.
it's
we
really
call it
amazing.
The cartel or the cabal of all these giant banks. And one of the things
I just want to throw this in while we're at that is people are not being educated. They say education is too expensive, right?
Yeah.
So it's way easier for them to bamboozle. You know what I mean? It's like way easier for them to bamboozle most people's minds.
Well, yes, the corporate sponsored mass TV and media, which is controlled by giant corporations that are using slave labor abroad, degrading the environment, escaping all rule of law throughout the world, and they don't want anybody necessarily reporting on them or knowing about it, and they control most of the leading television networks and channels. I think the worst part of all this is television, which could have been our greatest friend, has become maybe the worst thing that's happened because it's become a way for people to escape from reality or be publicly lied to, or the facts completely virtually omitted.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel that is starting to change, that even mainstream TV is beginning to report on some things that are really happening. But it, like you said, there's tremendous ignorance. We took civics out of the public school system.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that Sandra Day O'Connor, the former Supreme Court justice, has made this her cause to go around the country and try to reinstitute civics for junior high and high school kids. Kids in high school get nothing about economics, political science, what it is to be a citizen, what it means, how to vote, what the issues are. Where when I was a youngster back when when crustaceans walked the earth, as I find
yeah.
of saying, we had civics in the classroom, and we did debates from the headlines of the newspapers, and we were trained. We had to take both a state and federal constitution test, and today that has been taken out. Just about everything has been taken out, except for math and science taught in a very linear fashion, which many of the children aren't really responding to.
Right.
So we have a massive failure, in a sense, to educate people in critical thinking, citizenship, how the economy works, and all the things that we need to survive and thrive have been sort of systematically removed from the system.
Well, do you think it's related to all the deregulation that was going on in the late 80s, early 90s?
Yes, I do. It started in the 80s, but it really accelerated in the 90s. With the end of the Clinton presidency, when Greenspan and Rubin and Lawrence Summers were the big three controlling things, they conspired to completely deregulate the economy, especially the trading of derivatives. They were behind with the Republicans in Congress. They got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which had separated regular mortgage lending banking from investment banking, like the big guys like Goldman and J.P. Morgan Chase and the speculative, which had been in place since Roosevelt was president, and they took that legislation away.
Now, didn't you tell me recently that there was some note found where they were actually admitting this on paper or something? That they were doing it consciously and on purpose?
Yes. actually, I discovered one of my favorite journalists today is Bill Moyers.
Me too.
Who has his show on PBS. And one of the things I saw was an article by another of my favorite journalists, Greg Palast.
Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T?
Yes, P-A-L-A-S-T. One of the books he wrote was The Best Little Country That Money Can Buy.
Oh.
and things on... Now, there... this article, which was originally in Vice magazine, was published on Bill Moyers' website, was entitled Larry Summers and the Secret Endgame Memo. And he writes, and I quote, "When a little birdie dropped the endgame memo through my window, its content was so explosive, so sick and plain evil, I just couldn't believe it. The memo confirmed every conspiracy freak's fantasy that in the late 1990s, the top U.S. Treasury officials secretly conspired with a small cabal of banker big shots to rip apart financial regulation across the planet.
Wow.
When you see 26.3% unemployment in Spain, desperation and hunger in Greece, riots in Indonesia and Detroit, and bankruptcy, go back to the end game memo, the genesis of the blood and tears. He goes on to say, the Treasury official playing the banker's secret endgame was Larry Summers. Today, Summers is Barack Obama's leading choice for chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve. And you and I know that he backed out of that because Obama's own party, the Democrats, plus leading economists in the world, wrote huge documents and presented them to the president. Please do not hire Summers. Palast goes on to say that he confirmed the memo's authenticity from the UN. He states that the big bank's purpose was to eliminate controls on banks in every nation on the planet in one single move.
Wow.
So these are the kinds of information that I get a hold of, and I publish that in one of my online newsletters, which is you can reach it, soothsayer, SOOTHESAYER.com.
Okay. Well, that's heartbreaking. One more thing I want to throw in there before I want us to go back to the Glass-Steagall Act, but you were also telling me that there's some kind of organization going on in the Pacific for the Asian countries.
Yes, the Trans-Pacific Treaty. You've, of course, heard of NAFTA and how disastrous that was, that deregulated banking and corporations. They could hire slave labor anywhere they want. They could degrade the environment. They could go way beyond the rule of law. And we lost major hundreds of thousands of jobs in this country. And people know that by now, that there's a tremendous this is another trade agreement that would essentially do the same thing between the U.S. and Asia. And it's being negotiated very secretly. And again, it's deregulation in mass of all of the activities, the business activities of the transnational corporations and banks among these Asian nations and the United States. You can hardly see what's going on there because they're covering it up,
of course,
keeping it a secret. And we mentioned about the Glass-Steagall Act, which actually did was a major effective regulator of banking. It kept the banks intact so that they wouldn't fail, if like they almost did in 2008. Because of massive derivative trading and massive losses with that gambled money. The banks that were not in that business would have been kept separate and therefore safe from that system. Now, I wanted to mention that Elizabeth Warren is our friend in the Senate, who was elected as senator from Massachusetts, and knows more about the banking system than any 10 people that you'll know, and she would know how to take these too big to fail giant criminal operations apart and move their assets into smaller banks, and she could take this system down without crashing the system. See, I think each administration, the Bush administration and the Obama administration, are afraid if they discipline the banks, if they really penalize them for their criminal activity and put these guys in jail, that the whole system will collapse. That's what they're afraid of.
So that's
and
very interesting.
And she knows how to do this without collapsing the system.
Oh, bless her heart. That's Elizabeth Warren.
Yes. She knows how. She wants to restore the Glass-Steagall Act, which was thrown out. It was present since the Roosevelt administration. Glass-Steagall was a legislation that said regular mortgage lending banks were one thing, and investment banks were another thing, and they needed to be separated so that the core banking system, where you get your mortgage or your business loan, would not be subject to the wild, wild casino-style speculative derivatives market of the investment banks. Mm. And then in 1999, under Bill Clinton, by the way, when you had a Greenspan, Rubin, and Lawrence Summers, and of course Timothy Geithner was head of the New York Federal Reserve, they got rid of those laws. They got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, and they instituted what is called the Commodities Modernization Act, which took all restraints pretty much off derivatives trades. Hmm. Now you have collapsing of funds worth billions of dollars, like MF Global collapsed a couple of years ago because its customers' money were used just to write a call option on the euro dollar. Call options are a bet that something's going to go up. A put option is a bet that something's going to go down. And these derivatives markets aren't buying stocks and bonds, they're buying bets. And when they're on the wrong side of that, they can collapse into the hundreds of billions of dollars of losses, which is what happened with MF Global. And former Governor Corzine of New Jersey, which was the one that managed that, was brought in before Congress. They treated him like a king, and he was never indicted, never anything. Nothing has happened to him so far. It may in the future, who knows, but nothing has happened. And his customers' money, without their permission, was lost. Every cent of it was lost in that derivative contract. Hmm. These are examples of things that are going on. There's no actual product. Yeah, there's no actual, it doesn't do the economy any good. In fact, it threatens the economy ongoing with catastrophe because this is like having Las Vegas and the casinos running the world. Mm-hmm. It's basically what it is. $800 trillion is being traded in derivatives. If you taxed each one of those trades, we wouldn't have any budget deficits. Mm-hmm. All of our programs would be funded. It's so expensive, and yet they're getting away with paying practically nothing in taxes.
Well, just let me go back to something. Way back when they started the Federal Reserves, right?
Yes, in 1913, December of 1913.
Okay, whoever was the president, I'm Canadian, so I can forget.
Woodrow Wilson, I believe.
Okay, and he said something, and I see this line also in your book about another situation, but he said if people knew what had just been signed, they would be in the streets. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay, so...
The creation of the Federal Reserve was a gift to the banks.
Okay.
It was passed off as we needed a Federal Reserve to help as a hedge against crashes, depressions, bad economies, and it's just a gift to the banks. Guess what? We had the Depression of 1929, the Depression of the 1930s, the 1970s, and now this one with the Federal Reserve intact that has done nothing to ward off these various busts and depressions and recessions. It's just a gift to the banks. We do need a central bank. I think that has been shown that is a positive. But the Federal Reserve, which is the group of bankers, the head of which is appointed by whoever the administration of the government, it's not a government entity, by the way. Mm-hmm. It really isn't. It technically, they don't work for the government. Hmm. This is the banks, although the president appoints the head of the Federal Reserve, which is what we're talking about now when Bernanke is leaving. We could go on and on about this. I don't know how much your listeners keep track of these things. I keep track of these things, and I think that we are headed, if we don't reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act and start regulating global finances and trade, that we're head for the mother of all crashes. Hmm. When that could happen or is likely to happen is toward the end of 2017.
Okay.
And the worst part of this depression may be between 2017 and 2020, when the cycle reaches a bottom under the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Aquarius in December of 2020. So my feeling is this may have to play out, and many, many people are going to suffer and be victimized by it if they don't. Now, you asked me earlier on about what we should do about this. I think that what we need to do is pay a great deal of attention to our local communities and get politically as much as possible and personally involved in community efforts like local community organic farming and gardening, sustainable architecture and water management. We're in the midst of a global water crisis, which I talk about extensively in my book, Fast Forward.
Yes, you do.
Because of climate change. My suggestion to people has been consistent. Move inland to a place of elevation where there is plenty inland supply of fresh water, surrounded by farmland, committed people in agriculture that are getting away from GMOs and industrialized farming, and people who will be involved in local organic farming and gardening, and local entrepreneurial businesses that are worker-owned. I quote an economist by the name of Gar Alperovitz in my second book, who has worked a system out in detail how we could go back and relocalize and concentrate on getting the decisions away from the big guys, away from big government, away from big business, big corporations, and back into small entrepreneurial businesses that are family-owned or worker-owned, and create a system of not just surviving but thriving on a local level. This system is going to be more democratic because when it's small, people can get involved, their voices can be heard, they can understand the local issues that they're voting for or they're participating in. This is what brought me to Ithaca, New York, because this community is dedicated to all of these things and is successfully doing these things right.
And do you have normal housing? Like, do you have houses or do you have community housing? You know?
Well, I'll tell you what we've got. We've got just about everything here.
Mm.
We have one of the most successful eco-villages in the United States, non-religious eco-village, called Eco Village at Ithaca, that is just completing its third division. It had two divisions, and this is the third one that's being completed. They have passive houses, which means they don't need any central heat or air conditioning.
Oh, wow.
It's a house within a house. They are putting up huge arrays of solar panels so that most of their electricity will be absorbed by that, so the electric company may wind up owing them money. They have the land itself. They try to occupy as little as possible for the buildings and keep the land open. They have an organic vegetable farm and an organic berry farm, which everybody contributes to. You either work in it or you pay a fee to be a part of it. They have meetings. They share meals together in local clubhouses. Each person owns privately his or her own unit. They now are developing, the third development is going to have a whole section for seniors that want to spend the rest of their lives there. So everything is on one level and convenient for seniors to comfortably age there.
Hmm.
This is all being thought out here in Eco Village.
Well, let me ask you this as well. So is it back to like credit unions for the banking system?
Yes.
For the Eco Village? Or?
Yes. You've got to be careful, again, about credit unions. I think those are excellent ways to go, but you also have to do your homework as how solvent is the credit union. You know, we've all our lives, we've gone into banks without questioning
mm-hmm.
anything much.
Right.
You know, we open an account in a bank that happens to be a neighbor. We don't think about, well, how solvent is it? How many bad loans do they have? how much are they participating in derivatives or speculative ventures? the local banks we have here are pretty much out of that loop. They didn't give out subprime loans. They are not into derivatives. They're strictly the old-fashioned mortgage lending banks of yesteryear, and they've stayed that way.
Hmm.
So
that's another... That was a little foresight on somebody's part, eh?
I think in North Dakota they have actually a state bank now that's the most solvent in the country.
Hmm.
They've just broken away from the whole big banking and federal system and have their own state bank. So I feel in terms of states, in terms of cities and towns, there's going to be many more people making the effort on a local basis to reestablish a sound local participatory economy of equal opportunity. Here, incidentally, there is a big effort in the city of Ithaca. They're creating low-income green housing so that people who make less money can rent an apartment in a and live with great dignity in a lovely building that's actually using green materials.
Hmm.
So they have a whole array of housing opportunities. They have high-end housing here, and they have low-end, which is beautiful and dignified and green.
Oh, wow, that's great.
We have Cornell University here, which is one of the leading science and technology universities
in the
world.
Well, I love what you said. It's good to be around a university. Tell people
yes.
Why. That's a really helpful.
Exactly. I think for intellectual capital, especially universities that are dedicated to these things. Here, Cornell has created is working side by side with a miniature Silicon Valley here in Ithaca. Small technological companies have come in and they're working to create what we would call a near perfect battery. And I have in my book a section on this, that one of the major solutions to the energy crisis and getting off of fossil fuel are battery technology.
Oh.
Batteries have been there. They lose power. They're very insufficient. At best, they're 19% efficient. They're developing a battery here that's 99% efficient.
Oh, really?
So if you can get that into an electric car, or if you have solar or wind, one of the reasons it hasn't taken off that much is if you don't have any sun or wind, you're not producing energy. You need a near-perfect battery to store that energy. So Cornell is working on a lot of things like that. We have Ithaca College mm-hmm. here as well, which is they are so dedicated to the sustainability movement, solar architecture, organic gardening and farming, so that we have these. A major university and a small college, both absolutely dedicated to these things and working on them so that they have an array of people that work there, that live here,
mm-hmm.
that are in major ways. And also we have the youngest mayor ever elected in U.S. history. 2 years ago, he was elected at the age of 24.
Oh, wow.
And
so he's really hot to trot. He's busy with stuff, hey?
He is dynamite. His
wow.
name is Savante Myrick, and he's a person of mixed race and ethnicity that
mm-hmm.
had come from a very poor family where he and his mother lived out of their car for a while, his family. He got into Cornell University and graduated at the top of his class, and they loved him so much at Cornell, they asked him to manage their alumni organization, which he did so well. And the local Ithacans said, why don't you run for the town council? Because everybody liked him so much, and he was able to get things done.
Wow.
So he ran. He
That's
was
remarkable.
On the town council. Then they said to him, hey, Savante, why don't you run for mayor? Which he did and was elected with four candidates with a 57% majority.
Wow, that's really exciting. Well, we have to move on to other things because we have to cover 42 topics, don't we?
Yes.
So so we're talking about sustainability, and I want you to speak about the oil around the world, the oil biz. What's happening with all of that? You know, the BP explosion and all of that. Like what?
I have to tap myself down.
Okay.
Otherwise, I will have a major tantrum on the air about the oil company.
Well, that might convince everybody to pay more attention, right?
Well, the amount of drilling, undersea drilling, like when we saw the terrible BP disaster in the Gulf, which, by the way, is still a major disaster. And they have instituted new areas there where they're drilling even more so than they were when this disaster took place. And
I heard they were getting away from the fines and so on that they had. They're kind
of
suing.
Yes, exactly.
Or it doesn't
matter. The drilling and the process of called fracking for natural gas that is going on throughout this country and throughout this world. Drilling for oil is filthy. You take the country of Nigeria, which has had unlimited, no rule of law, no environmental laws control. You can't even live there. Everybody's just choking to death dying of lung diseases. It's a terrible, impoverished country that's a hotbed for terrorists and everything else because it's just been absolutely ruined. You take Iraq, the mess that's in Iraq, which we know a war we should never have done, a country which we dismantled. The oil companies have had free reign in Iraq, and it's so polluted there that the Tigris and Euphrates rivers are drying up, and people are dying of every conceivable kind of disease in that country. Everywhere where the oil companies are allowed to do their thing is just devastating to this environment. Thank goodness President Obama is standing firm on the Keystone thing from Canada all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, and that Canadian tar oil that they want to create a pipeline for. Because once that leaks out, the environment is almost, you can't do anything. It's destroyed essentially forever because of the nature of this tar oil. Up here in our area, we're in what is known as the Marcellus Shale, which covers a great deal of Pennsylvania and upstate New York and has some of the richest natural gas deposits in the world. We have successfully fought in this area, taking our case to the Supreme Court of not allowing fracking who wrecks your water supplies, wrecks your underground aquifers, and God knows what it does to the tectonic plate. That they are disrupting. I could go on and on. I think that, unfortunately, we are so addicted to these things. We're so, we're lied to. You know, we're saying if we allow fracking, we'll be energy independent on wonderful natural gas, which doesn't pollute. Well, guess what? The process pollutes in a major way. Hmm. And secondly, we won't be energy independent because most of these pipelines that are being built across the United States into the Gulf are this gas and oil is sold to countries like China. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're making ourselves energy independent, conserving all this energy for us. Now, what I think is going to happen in the 2020s is that we're going to make tremendous technological breakthroughs with the Jupiter Saturn conjunction in Aquarius, and then in 2024, Pluto going into Aquarius. Revolutionary changes that are going to get us almost completely off of fossil fuel.
Goody.
And one of these revolutions is going to be fusion, nuclear fusion. We already have hydrogen fusion, but right now it's expensive and impractical to implement. But the Livermore Laboratory, which has achieved it out in California, combined with a British company, are already working on how to create an electric plant, an energy-generating plant using hydrogen fusion. It is going to happen. I'm absolutely convinced of it. This is going to make the oil, the gas, the coal, all of the fossil fuel burning that has literally taken a wrecking ball to the global climate obsolete.
Mm-hmm. What would make human consciousness change enough so that instead of it always being about money, it becomes more about quality of life, you know?
Well, bottom line, in my opinion, is we do have to create economies that work. There's a fundamental thing. I remember Della Reese years ago says, I've been rich and I've been poor and rich is better. She summed it up. We don't want to create poverty. Mm-hmm. We don't want people to say, well, money isn't important, and then wonder where they're, how they're going to pay their rent and how they're going to buy the groceries. But what we need are new templates, the ones like I described earlier in this discussion. Mm-hmm. We need to get away from global transnational capitalism and banksterism, which is running the world right now. A startling statistic is that the top 300 richest people in the world have more money than the bottom 3 billion people have.
That is incredible. Isn't that incredible? Wow.
And in this country, 49% of the population of this country lives at or below the poverty line.
Wow. Well, let's jump into Occupy Wall Street, because somewhere in here you're talking about we are having influences of a recurring revolutionary thought process and so on. And do you think there's any way of affecting that terrible gap because of our revolutionary attitudes during Occupy?
I do. I think that the Occupy movement, first of all, the mainstream media hardly covered them at all.
I know, yeah.
They stayed away. If you're old enough, as I am, to remember the 1960s,
media
faithfully covered the civil rights movement and the anti-war movements. You saw them cover the demonstrations. You saw them address these. That was in the era when news had integrity and real reporting went on, which is necessary to keep a democracy going. Today, it's all about cheap entertainment and silliness and also out and out lying to you, or out and out omitting the important things that should be reported on today. PBS, you can count on them. The BBC, you can count on certain things. If you go to PBS and the BBC, they will report on things that we need to hear. But the mainstream media is not doing it.
How about New York Times?
Yeah. And also on Paradigm Shifters.
Well, yeah, we get some real truth, but the truth is sort of seeping out thanks to the internet. Hey, the truth is coming through. Even you can read international newspapers, like you're talking about BBC, eh?
Oh, yes, and the internet is where I get most of my news. Mm-hmm. I get a tremendous reporting over the internet. There's commondreams.org, truthout.org. The Huffington Post has been good from time to time in reporting on things. Mm-hmm.
Chris Hedges is good for a good thought, hey?
Yes, and I feel that there are places that we can go to get real news. It's funny, my European and Asian clients who come over here, mm-hmm. say, my gosh, America doesn't have any real news. They turn on their TV and look at, mainstream. They said they're not reporting anything over here of consequence.
But, I'm Canadian, and even as kids, we knew that when we came visited our American relatives.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Oh. Right next door,
Yes.
So
because you're a Canadian, and you come over here and you see the silliness.
I know. Well, it's actually a distraction, isn't it? It's to keep
it
you, because we think about Clinton, and I always refer to, okay, this is a Monica Lewinsky kind of thing, meaning he is doing some big, heavy-duty political stuff, but we're all looking at the blue dress or whatever,
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You're so right about this. This mm-hmm. is... our addiction to silly scandals and trivia and sleaze and all of this kind of thing is very sad indeed. They play to people who want to escape from reality by looking at these things instead. And I do think that's starting to change.
Yes, I think so too. I think a lot of people, that's the internet, So do you think there is a revolutionary fervor that's possible in this country?
I do. But the problem is, as I pointed out in my book, is we're in a surveillance society now.
Oh, are we ever? Didn't we find that out, eh?
Yes. I talked about it extensively in my new book, which was published in December of 2012. And then guess what? In June, we had Snowden blowing the whistle on NSA and what are the massive spying that is going on at every turn. All of our phones, our emails, everything that we have is being surveilled in this country. It's almost like Stalinist Russia, the KGB watching us at every turn. And they say, well, this is because we've got to keep track of terrorists.
Terrorism right there, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's such... And of course, there are terrorists. There is terrorism. We know this. But basically, it's most of the violence that's taking place in our society today are people with mental illness that are acquiring guns and going in and creating mass shootings.
Well, let's talk about health care, because mental health, well, you and I had a wonderful conversation on the phone yesterday, and we were talking about mental health and having pharmaceuticals for depression.
Yeah.
And let's chat a bit about that.
Well, the track record for the pharmaceutical companies in dealing with mental health is pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. The long-term studies that have been done say on most antidepressants, an 18-year study came out the end of last year that said most of them are hardly effective at all, and they have very bad side effects. They may, if you have severe clinical depression, suicidal depression, going on an antidepressant may at least keep you from committing suicide. It may raise you above that level. And going on Ambien, which is a sleep aid, which has terrible, by the way, the long-term side effects, may help you to sleep for a few nights. But beyond that immediate, it doesn't fix anything. And over the long term, it's often totally ineffective. The pharmaceutical industries have made huge amounts of money on antipsychotic drugs across this society. And it's startling to know how many people are on these drugs today.
And the fact that they're not necessarily getting better.
Right. People are not addressing looking at these illnesses and diseases and insufficiencies connected with the brain and nervous system and say, how can we cure this? How can we fix this? Instead, it's how can we treat a symptom for the time being? They seem to have abandoned the base because it's much more profitable for companies that people are going to spend a lot of money treating those symptoms as opposed to if they actually found a way to fix something, then that would be it. It was not that profitable. Now, I'm not that jaded that I think that's all there is to it. But I do feel that that's a component of, again, anything for profit and greed in this country. Anything for profit and greed. That's where we seem to be going.
But I keep feeling more and more people are aware of that corruption, and more people are ready to fight about it, or not fight about
it. I do. For instance, the kind of industrialized farming in this nation, which puts antibiotics into the animals that make them obese, and it's also creating antibiotic resistance bacteria and making the people obese who are eating these animals. The deregulation of farming, the GMOs that you and I have discussed, that people can't digest, and that the GMOs are engineered to resist Roundup, which is a weed killer and an insecticide that's a neurotoxin. Mm-hmm. So we're spraying everything with Roundup. And meantime, there's some definite evidence that this is causing the collapse of the bees and all of the pollinators. Mm. So industrialized farming without regulation, without lengthy research to support what it's doing, is creating another catastrophe. And again, that's all about a handful of people at the top making a lot of money from these things.
What's going to happen with Monsanto? Do you think there's going to be enough revolution, if you will call it that, to stop them?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm optimistic.
Good.
First of all, the Europeans have dropped GMO. They've dropped Monsanto stuff now. Most of the nations in Europe said we're getting rid of that.
Good.
In this country, they're not renewing the Monsanto protection bill that has been around for a while. And there's a lot of protest. You see, if people get involved in protesting these things, if they sign petitions on the internet or write their congressman or talk to their neighbors or, you know, we can organize ourselves to do better and to eventually eliminate these ills. But people have to know they exist, number one. And number two, in each person's own way and own backyard, he or she needs to get involved in these things. I think we can and will change these things. I really do.
So we can call forth the Glass-Steagall Act of the reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall?
Yes, or a version thereof. Elizabeth Warren has written up a new version of the Glass-Steagall Act, and she and another of my favorites, Bernie Sanders from Vermont, are really pushing this. And if people realize it, but too many people just don't understand how this economy is run, who these banksters are, what are their names. It's interesting. We talk about revolutions. Back in the American Revolution, we knew who King George was. The French Revolution knew who Louis XV and Marie Antoinette were. They were the heads of the monarchical heads of these governments. Today, people don't even know the names of, let's say, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, which is Lloyd Blankfein, or the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, which is Jamie Dimon. Many people don't even know who these people are. And they've been through all of this stuff. They have been there when all of this bad stuff was created. Mm-hmm. The mortgage bubble, the subprime lending, the financialization of these entities into credit default swaps, they were a part and particle of the whole thing. And people don't really know. Yes, the financial community knows well. Lloyd Blankfein is famous for saying after the 2008 crash that he was doing God's work.
Wow. Isn't that ironic, hey?
You see, I feel that the mentality of these people in these gigantic positions of wealth and power is very similar to the psychology of the monarchs that were in control in the old days.
I mean, God appointed them.
God, they have the divine right. They're simply superior. They know more. They know how to run things. The rest are just a bunch. The rest of us are a bunch of rabble.
Wow. Well, you know, you're just really making me think. I'm going, oh my gosh. I guess it's the, okay, so I'm doing like five things in my mind. One is with the food, denaturing of the food, the massive silliness of the media, and the people are kind of stunned. A lot of people can't even think straight. Do you notice
You're
that?
Absolutely right. I think this is behind also a lot of the mental illness.
I do too.
That the really, really bad diets we have, the toxic environments that we're in, and as you pointed out, the media environment. Al Gore appeared at the end of 2012 on a show in which he said, it's funny, the worst thing that, the best thing that should have happened to us is the invention of television, and it turns out to be the worst thing because of how the corporate giants control this media. They control it.
And if it's too intelligent, if it's too makes you really think, it gets pulled off.
If it goes into the realms that you and I believe in so much, which is the more spiritual realms, the healers and the psychics, and into those realms of human consciousness, they knocked them off the air. Larry King, interestingly enough, who retired a couple of years ago, from CNN. And I noticed on Larry King in the past several years of his show that people he used to really love having on, like Deepak Chopra and John Edwards and people like this, were suddenly missing. They weren't on. And it turned out, he said later on, one of the reasons he retired and left was that they stopped allowing him to have any of these people on. The right wing got so control of CNN. CNN was a great entity, an entrepreneurial entity created by Ted Turner in the 1990s. And what happened was Time Warner, this giant, media giant, comes along and makes Ted Turner, obviously, we want to buy CNN. And he says, well, if you do buy and incorporate CNN, you've got to allow me to be on the board and have a say, because this was my creation. It's around-the-clock news. And up to that point, it was pretty reliable. Time Warner buys CNN, and they slam the door in Ted Turner's face. He walks out, and he said it was the biggest mistake he ever made in his life, lost total control. About 40% of Time Warner stock in the early 2000s was owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, my gosh.
Who's to the right of Attila the Hun in his politics.
Now, in our discussion yesterday, you said Rupert Murdoch is still not even in jail, though he's in charge of... So he's one of those ones that's got immunity somehow.
Well, he was, a couple of years ago, indicted for a hacking in England, almost everywhere. His people were hacking into private phone conversations.
And over here, too, wasn't it?
With the Prime Minister of England and big heads of government. He was hacking in, and he was indicted for this. His company was indicted, and the woman who was the head of, I forget what her title, whether she was a president or vice president of media, she was indicted and tried and found guilty. Murdoch, again, slap on the wrist, fine. He's not in jail, is he?
No. But tell me this, is he still, does he still have power over, and is he still corralling thoughts?
He still owns the Wall Street Journal, USA Today. As I said, a large invested stock in Time Warner, and therefore CNN. He's still a very, very powerful person. He has not capitulated. He has not gone down. They have not put him out of business.
Wow. Well, now, let's go back to Larry King. He's apparently on a, what is it, RETV or something? It's
right.
It's a Russian, it's a non-commercial, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I haven't seen him on that particular show or that particular channel because I don't get it.
I think you can get it online, and I haven't actually either, but I'm kind of wondering if anybody who's listening knows that, I wonder if he's really pushing the edge now.
It would be interesting to see what he's doing. I mean, the man, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's over 80 years old now, so he's getting up there, but I liked the fact that Larry King had these very non-traditional people on who explored consciousness in a new and different way, and he had some very touching people on with wonderful messages and everything, and all of a sudden that stopped.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Now, as to whether he is doing that now in his new venue, I can't say because I haven't watched his show.
Well, it's time for a little research. But hey, Linda, let's have a commercial break right now. And the commercial break will be about a tool you told me about that would replace antidepressants. Do you remember?
Yes.
It's Fisher Wallace, is it?
Yes. I want to talk just briefly about a new field called energy medicine, which I talk about in my book. There is a, we have to start out with what is called the transmagnetic stimulator,
okay.
TMS it's called, which is was approved last year by the FDA for a treatment for depression, Parkinson's disease, and many other neurological disorders.
But I have to say something funny, which is at first it sounds like a sex toy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And now you may continue.
Well, it will certainly get a lot of people buying this one.
So tell us
Well, they say all sexual desire is in the brain, so.
Yeah, it all works together.
It all works together.
So it's transmagnetic, is that what it is?
A magnetic stimulator, it's called. Now, what is that? You lie down with your head between two powerful magnets.
Okay.
For a certain period of time. And a doctor who is trained in this gives you these treatments maybe two or three times a week, and it's quite expensive. It has been approved by the FDA, and some insurance may cover it, but it's been tested now for over 18 years, and it proves to be effective in at least 80% in treating these things, with very few, if any, side effects whatsoever.
And it treats insomnia, depression?
Depression, insomnia, Parkinson's, a number of things. And you can go online, Google this, and get information from their sites about it.
Okay.
Now,
great.
A second device that operates along the same premise without the magnets is called the Fisher-Wallace Stimulator. Now, the Fisher-Wallace has been around as long as the transmagnetic stimulator has. Some inventors created it's a small device that looks like a pair of earphones with the wires hanging down into something that looks like a little cell phone. It's just the simplest thing you ever saw. You put it on on the top of your head, and it creates a mild electric current. Really,
oh, wow.
Really mild. It's just barely a tickle associated with it. And you give yourself, there's a different people will respond to this. They have to kind of work out a Goldilocks treatment, whether once a day or twice a day. They recommend twice a day for 20 minutes. You give yourself these treatments, and it has a tremendous track record for lifting people out of depression, because the brain of a depressed person is dark in the upper regions, the higher thought region of the brain.
In those brain scans that they do.
Yes, and all lit up in the fright, flight, lower region of the brain. What this does is reverse that and lights up the upper region of your brain.
Wow.
Now, the cost of this, they have a site over the internet. You can buy it over the internet. It is approved by the FDA, so you're not doing something out on the fringe. Mm-hmm. They have all kinds of research to support the efficacy of this. My personal tale is that my husband has suffered chronic clinical depression throughout his life. And in the 1990s, had a major depressive breakdown and was on antidepressants and sleeping medic, all these antipsychotic drugs, which had terrible side effects for him for years. When he found out about this recently, he ordered the Fisher-Wallace stimulator a little less than 2 months ago. He has been transformed. And my husband is 76 years old. He's no longer depressed. He sleeps beautifully every night. He has no more sleeping trouble, which he's had since he was a baby.
Wow.
He's had sleeping disorders. He is enthusiastic. He's taking on project after project. He's all excited about it because my husband is very spiritual, very philosophical. He's reading all these wonderful books, and he believes that the end of his life period, that he has great purpose and meaning to him.
Isn't this exciting?
I cannot tell you on a personal level what this has meant to us.
And how many months did it take for him to really feel the effect?
It took about 2 days.
Oh my gosh, Linda.
2 days.
Wow, I'm very excited by that, because there's an awful lot of antidepressants floating around this country. We're going to have to say goodbye, and I don't want to. I always love talking to you.
Well, it's such a pleasure to be on your wonderful show, and I hope your show goes on forever, Veronica. We need paradigm shifters in the world today more than ever.
Well, you're sure one, so tell everybody how to get hold of you, and also tell them about your newsletter. We have to be fast.
Yes. You can get a hold of me at my email is soothsayer, soothesayer, at usa.net. My online newsletter, which goes up and stays up once a month, is soothesayer, SOOTHESAYER.com. And my book, Fast Forward, and my other book, What Next, you can buy on Amazon.com or off of my and my publisher's website.
And this book is actually really inspiring, even though it sounds a bit grueling, everybody. There's a lot of information on what to do, how to do it, a lot of bibliography, which I appreciate for references.
Yes.
So good for you. What wonderful work. And you're just such a wonderful spirit, and many blessings. And many blessings to everyone who's listening. May we all learn and have our own maybe quiet revolution as we take charge again. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Linda Sherman and I. And if you'd like any feedback on this show, hit the Ask Veronica button on my website, veronicaentwistle.com. Or if you want a session with me, or even to get hold of Linda, veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you for listening. Good night, and much love to all of us.